You are listening to Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast, Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm your host here, coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, and Hot Springs Village, Arkansas. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. Let's talk about companionship. More specifically, let's talk about making yourself a better companion. I appreciate you clicking play. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let me give you a quick update. This is the newest addition to the gear inside the Yellow Studio. And thanks to many of you who've made contributions, was able to invest in this. This is the Insta360 Ace Pro action camera. Has a little pop-out screen here. By the way, if you're listening to the audio, there's a video of today's show, so you might want to go check that out. So it has a screen, so if you're shooting yourself, then, well, you can see it. It's great. It's great. Haven't used it a whole lot yet. Just kind of playing around with it. Got a little Ulanzi. This is a Ulanzi kind of a selfie stick. I've had this for a while. Also has a little tripod. Because I have an adapter that will go on the top of this for my iPhone. So this isn't new, but the camera is. So thank you, thank you, thank you for your contributions to helping me up the game here inside the Yellow Studio. If you go over to the website and check out today's episode, making yourself a better companion, and today is April the 26th, 2024, Friday. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give dates, I think. I'm even thinking about numbering the episodes just for ease of going back and finding things. I don't know. We'll see. But if you go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, you will see the feature image for today's episode. And that image is a picture of my 100-year-old father holding my 92-year-old mother's hand as she lay dying. You will see a big bruise on his hand. My sister and I were inquiring, well, what happened? What? He didn't know. He does navigate around the house with a walker, and we suspected that he must have, while he had a hold of the handlebars of this thing, he bumped into a wall or a door jam or something and badly bruised his hand. But my mother passed away from this life on April the 4th, 2024. They had been married for 73 years, and so this is a testimony to the power of companionship. I will tell you that I started noodling on this idea a long, long time ago, before my mother even entered hospice. But once I had that photograph, I kind of put the finishing touches on this thing, and it makes sense, doesn't it? 73 years of marriage. Let me tell you, I had a conversation recently. This is kind of a sidebar. And somebody was asking me about who I was serving. And this was a question more in the professional arena. And I was explaining to them kind of my past and my history and my entree into helping city government leaders, specifically helping executives in city government with executive and leadership kind of coaching. Very personal, very mostly, not always, but mostly very one-on-one. And some point that same day, somebody was inquiring about this show, about Leaning Toward Wisdom, and about just my other podcast and stuff. And they were really kind of asking me to give them an idea of who it was that I was trying to get the attention of. Who's the audience, basically? And I just rather quickly uttered something that I had not uttered before. And it was, you know, come on, I am just a man in search of an epiphany. You can go over to randycantrell.com and you'll see that's the tagline there. I've long humorously used that because, frankly, it's true. It's self-deprecating, but it's absolutely true. I am just a man in search of an epiphany. And if you're like me, you don't get epiphanies all that often. Well, this was one of those cases where I don't know, off the cuff, and I'd never uttered this before. In fact, I'll go so far as to tell you, I hadn't consciously really even thought of this before. And it was, again, about leaning toward wisdom. And it really had to do with the Facebook group. If you're not in that, then go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, and the Facebook link there will take you to the group. And there's just one question that you got to answer, and it's drop dead easy. I'm here inside the Yellow Studio, by the way. So there's a strong hint. I answer the question by saying, you know, I guess wisdom is the topic, and I guess the target group would be mature introverts. I'm a guy on a quest to figure this thing out, and I myself am a mature introvert, and while I'm not excluding people who are not mature, okay, senior, and while I'm not excluding people that are extroverted, but I myself am a mature introvert, and wisdom is the thing. And so I said, I guess, you know, mature introverts that are seeking wisdom are kind of my people. Let's get back to companionship because, well, it kind of sort of ties in because birds of a feather and all that. Companion and companionship is defined as a person or animal with whom one spends a lot of time. That's a companion. A companionship is a feeling of fellowship or friendship. I was reading at some point when I kind of started noodling around with this idea. The question was asked, do you want to be alone with yourself? Are you comfortable being alone with yourself? And if you aren't, then why do you think anybody else would ever want to be around you? And I kind of chuckled about it because I've been comfortable being alone. I don't want to be alone all the time, but I am very comfortable being alone. I married a girl who is also very comfortable being alone. Yes, we love being together. But we don't have to be underfoot all the time. She has her sewing projects and other stuff, and she's busy, 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 and I'm busy, busy, and we have this life together, but there is this degree of independence. There is this degree of solitude that we just kind of both, frankly, need and enjoy. Now, that is not to say that, well, we love being alone because there's no better company than us. That ain't it. It's just we are not wired to need to be around a lot of people. And I began to think about that. Do you want to be alone with yourself? And if you don't want to be alone with yourself, what's that all about? Now, this author was kind of presupposing that if you're going to be comfortable for other people to be around, then you need to be comfortable to be around yourself. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was thought-provoking, so kudos for that. I want to begin with a word, effort, and I want to begin with that word for a number of reasons, none of the least of which is it's just not talked about. I understand that we're all looking for easy. I know we're all looking for the formula. We're all looking for the secret. We're all looking for the shortcut. We're all looking for the hack. And I understand that sometimes there are hacks and shortcuts and secrets and formulas. But for me, in my pursuit of wisdom, I put a big focus on effort because it is the one thing. I'm not saying there aren't others, but it is the one really big thing that we can control. You know, I think of it as the igniter in this combustion chamber of success that we are pursuing. You get to define that success, whether it's in relationships, companionship, or some other pursuit. If we put in enough effort, then I believe that we can ensure our growth. I believe that we can ensure our improvement. I'm not saying that we can achieve perfection, but we can get better. And the hard work that we put in, the effort, it may not result in some absolute win, but I believe, based on my experience in my own life and in the lives of the people that I'm close to, or even people professionally that I've served, it does result in personal growth. And it results in the kind of growth that can have an impact in every area of your life. Helen Keller wrote, "Be of good cheer. Do not think of today's failures, but of the success that may come tomorrow. You have set yourself a difficult task, but you will succeed if you persevere, and you will find a joy in overcoming obstacles. Remember, no effort that we make to attain something beautiful is ever lost." I believe that. And I would argue, I guess, I choose to believe that. Now, in recent weeks and in even some past episodes here at Leaning Toward Wisdom, I have talked about my challenges of just having just too many spinning plates, too many irons in the fire. Well, this goes directly to effort, which means we probably need to discuss another word, and that is capacity. I have talked for years and years and years about diluted effort. So we're going to take a couple of steps in this direction and a couple of steps in this direction, and then we're going to falter, and we're going to, okay, now we're going to change directions, and we're going to, and if we would have combined all of those steps into a single focus, we'd be there. But, you know, we chase something, we pursue something, and then the newness wears off and we get distracted with something else that we, okay, well, now we'll try this, when there's just this power of stick-to-itiveness that if we would have engaged that, we probably would have been way, way further up the road. You know, it's tantamount to a person who wants to make a financial investment, and you're playing around with stocks, and you're looking at it every day. And so you buy this stock, and it goes up, and that's great, and it goes up the next day, and that's great, and it goes up the next day, and that's great, and it stalls, and then it goes down, and you panic, and you get out of it. And then you're going and looking for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And while in the stock market there aren't any guarantees, there is something to staying power. There is something to stick-to-itiveness. Day trading's a hard way to go. I'm not saying that there aren't people that can pull it off, but I can tell you I don't have the brain power or the interest to pull it off. And there seems to be some financial wisdom in, say, if you put your money in an S&P 500 index fund and you just stayed with it and stayed with it and stayed with it, I mean, over a decade, I mean, there are many of these things that are 12 to 15% return on investment. It's very sustainable, but you just got to stay the course. And staying the course is more difficult for some of us than it is for others of us. This notion of irons in the fire and plate spinning. And as I think about effort and I think about capacity, because there is a limit to our effort, quite simply because we have limited time. And we also, frankly, we have limits to our ability. I've long, long studied YouTubers. Now, I don't aspire necessarily to be a YouTuber, not probably in the way that you're thinking about it and the way that most people think are thinking about it. To me, it's a great platform and it's a great avenue to reach people, which is why I'm going to increasingly incorporate video, because there are people that they just, that's the preference. And part of this whole little action camera thing is to make more compelling, not just this talking head stuff, but to make more compelling video. And I'm interested in doing that because I'm interested in being a good and better storyteller. And I'm interested in that because I think the stories that I want to tell are important. They're important to me. They're important for me to pass on, which is how this whole thing got started, with a couple of kids that were in high school that were living in my house who happened to be my kids, and just wanting to pass on some wisdom. And it's not lost on me that the passing of my mother, there's just this loss that happens over time. I don't mean the loss of a loved one. That's true enough. But there's just this loss of connectivity to the past. There's this loss of, now, who was this? And where did they come from? And what was their story? Right? I mean, as generations pass, we lose those stories. And maybe like me, you're somewhat fascinated with some of these genealogy shows that you'll see, you know, about going back and finding your roots and that sort of thing. And that stuff gets lost. It just gets lost over time. So a big, big part of this Leaning Toward Wisdom initiative almost 25 years ago was to try to preserve that. I wasn't trying to preserve personal, you know, personal, intimate family genealogy kind of stuff. I was just trying to preserve, here's where I'm at in life, and here's what I've learned so far. And I'm not worried about going back and looking at the content to see, okay, well, have I been consistent? Because I would hope that I really haven't been consistent, meaning that the things that I said 25 years ago, I'm also saying today. Because I would hope that over 25 years, I've learned, I've grown some. And so another part of it was just documenting the journey of it all for people coming up behind me. I'm just at this stage on the path, and maybe you're a little further up the trail from me. Maybe you're a little further back. Maybe you're way back. Maybe you're way ahead. We're all where we are on this timeline of life. And I do think that we all have effort and we all have capacity. Capacity. A big component of capacity is time. And time's easy to measure, right? I mean, it's definite. We look at our iPhone, that's the time. Ability might be impossible to measure, but as I started to say, I look at these YouTubers, and you can look at somebody producing content in one kind of an area, and you can look at other people producing content in those areas. And the success based on subscriptions, based on views, you know, based on these metrics that it seemed to be important to content creators, it's very clear that, okay, well, this person are wildly successful, and these other people, you know, less so. And there can be reasons for that. And time and capacity, or time and ability, both have a role. Some channels were started a long, long time ago. Some are relatively new. Well, that's going to play into how successful they are. Some people just are better at it. They've just got skills. They've just got the talent. They've got better ability. You know, it's been long been argued. If you take something like a basketball or a football or a piano or a guitar, take any of these kinds of things that have this finite cost. I don't know. Let's say that you go buy a quality football for $100. You go buy a quality basketball for $100. You go buy a quality guitar for $1,000. You go buy a quality piano for $5,000. In my hands, none of the four are worth much, because I don't know how to, I'm not skilled at them. Aaron Rodgers, give him a $100 football, he's a $40, $50 million a year guy. LeBron James, put a $100 basketball in his hands, I don't know what those guys might, I mean, he's printing money. Well, like Aaron Rodgers isn't. In the hands of a master pianist, that $5,000 piano, unbelievable. In the hands of a Mark Knopfler, a $1,000 guitar, you can't really put a price tag on it. I mean, these are people that are making fortunes with the same tools that in my hands, well, I I'll put it this way. The $100 guitar in my, or the $100 football or basketball in my hands is probably worth $20. You know, I mean, I'm going to diminish the value of these things because those aren't areas where I have ability. And I think that's really important because we want to think that no matter who we are or what we are, the world's our oyster, and it's not. It depends on the world. It depends on the world you're trying to play in. I think we're all limited. I really believe that we are all limited by thinking that this is all I have, this is all I can do. When in reality, there's so much more that we're capable of doing. I mean, all you have to do is look at all the countless videos out there about Navy SEAL training and many of these other physical and mental challenges that people regularly conquer. And in some cases, just the guy who tries to become part of a SEAL team doesn't know he can be until he does it. I mean, do we think that some young man enters the military full well knowing that he can do it? No. He has to prove it to himself, and he has to prove it to the program that he's fit. And they don't all make it. But I would argue many of them that may not have initially thought that they could, but they kind of wanted to, found out, okay, I've got the stuff. The person that wants to run their first marathon, they might quit because they might think, man, this is too hard. But then there are those people that they go on to run their very first marathon and they realize, you know, I mean, I kind of thought I could, but I wasn't sure I could. And now I know I can. And the people that are quitters, they are fully convinced. See, I told you I couldn't do it. It is that famous Henry Ford quote, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And so what if we believed, what if we truly, truly believed that we were more able? I've asked hundreds of executives and business owners and other leaders in my coaching, would you say that most of your dreams have come true? 100% have said yes. I've never, ever had a human sitting in front of me and say, no, I don't think most of my dreams have come true. They all say yes. Now, let me qualify this. I do work with high performers, but I'm not talking about people whose names you know. I'm talking about just ordinary Joes and Sallys who are working in organizations or building organizations or trying to. And this does not mean, by the way, that every dream they've ever had was achieved. And it certainly doesn't mean that they have no more dreams to chase. It just means that they have achieved mostly the things they set out to achieve. And after they weigh in and tell me this, I will then inevitably, I will say, kind of makes you wonder what kind of potential we're leaving on the floor, doesn't it? Kind of makes you wonder, are we aiming high enough? Are we dreaming big enough? What if we dreamed bigger? And what if we chased something that might seem impossible to us? I mean, our lives seem to be proving that we are able to achieve most of the things that we pursue. So why wouldn't we try to reach for more? And why shouldn't we try to help other people reach for more? And that includes companionship, being better friends. Now, this component of time, well, that's easier, right? Because every day we look at our iPhones and we know what time it is. And every day we have decisions to make on where we're going to spend our time and where we're not going to spend our time. And so every day we have the capacity and the ability, and we do say yes and we do say no. And we're going to say yes to some things. And sometimes we say yes to things that we would rather say no to. And we may also say no to some things that we really would have preferred to have said yes to. And all of those decisions, they impact our time. They impact our calendar. They determine our calendar. And our calendar and those things that we answer wrongly, those things determine our bitterness and our resentment. So suppose that I say yes to an invitation that I would rather say no to. I don't know. Maybe in the moment I'm a coward. Maybe I'm too worried about hurt feelings. Not my own, but this person who's inviting me. And maybe there's social pressures in play. But for some reason, I give the wrong answer. And now I dread this event that I have put on my calendar. My question is, who is served by my wrong answer? Well, I'm not. Now, the person that invited me, they're really not, because I don't want to go. Nobody else in my sphere is positively impacted by this, because I'm going to dread doing this thing. And it certainly is bound to impact my demeanor and my behavior. Now, this doesn't mean that I have to be hateful. I mean, I can certainly make a decision that is ideal in a polite way. I can be gracious. I can thank this person for inviting me, but politely decline. A major component of managing all of this effort and this ability and this time is truth. Truth. Because every day that we live, we're surrounded by deceit. Lies are all around us, constantly. I mean, we just have come to think of lying and misinformation as a way of life. It's not. It's not. Doesn't have to be. Because we can be devoted to the truth, and we can be devoted to our commitment to tell the truth, firstly to ourselves and then to everybody else. And by doing that, we can avoid an awful lot of mess. Because I think about the lies that we tell ourselves, and I think about the toll that they take. And I suspect they take a heavier toll than we really understand. I don't know anybody who wants to live a deluded life. I don't know anybody who says, you know what I want? I want delusion. That's what I want. Well, you would think that it is what we want, because there sure seems to be a pretty big effort for us to kind of create this matrix that defines our life. You know, we tell ourselves what is and isn't possible without any evidence. I encounter this every day that I coach somebody. You know, they'll describe some situation at work and something that they think is going on. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, let's just pull back and let's survey the evidence. Let's see if the evidence supports what you think is going on. And almost all the time, not always, but almost all the time, after some moments of reflection and looking at what we know, I don't mean what we speculate or what we surmise or what we assume, but what we know to be true, the person will admit, well, no, I think that may be what's going on, but you don't have any evidence. And so what we do is we wrap ourselves in these blankets of anxiety and insecurity while we pretend to be confident and strong and able. And, you know, we show off and we show out instead of showing up. And that's not a good recipe. I have no way of knowing how many people that I know who drive expensive cars to look rich while privately they may be in debt and broke. All that fronting, all that pretending, all that delusion to medicate ourselves on feeling better about our life. My question is, what if we just behaved better? What if we just told ourselves and others around us the truth? And what if we did that all the time? And what if we stopped fronting? And what if we stopped pretending? And what if we did the right thing in kindness? And what if we always behaved with integrity? And what if the delusions and what if the misjudgments of other people, what if we just stripped them of that power? What if we didn't respond to hateful treatment? What if we didn't get drawn into the delusion? So a woman tells me about a sister, this lifelong drug addict since childhood, since teenage years. And it is a long, laborious story of hurt and betrayal and just despicable behavior. The parents, well, they're gone now, but only after years and years and years and years of being taken advantage of by this daughter. And the delusion of this wayward sister foisted onto everybody in her wake, most notably the people who cared the most about her, her family, And now when Big Sister draws this line in the sand after realizing that this relationship, this companionship with Little Sister is only enabling Little Sister to impose her delusions, now does the venom really start spewing from the Little Sister. A lot of vile, a lot of hateful things. Well, Big Sister just thought she had endured some hard things. But now this was really, really hard. And so she says, you know, I love her very much, but she just can't see it. She is so warped in how she sees her life and how she sees my life, and there's no fixing this. I now realize I have to commit myself to the people who I love, who are willing to love me back. And as I listen to this story, a story, by the way, I've heard more times than I can recall, all the people whose lives have been disrupted by a loved one who's disconnected from the reality of their own poor choices and their own bad, evil behavior. And I think of all the waste. I think of the wasted lives, the wasted time, the wasted resources, just a total, colossal, disastrous loss. I hate the word mindset, mostly because it's trite, it's overused. That viewpoint, that perspective, that whatever word you might find suitable, it is important. Mindset. It does determine how we behave. It does determine our choices. It does determine our effort and our dreams and our aspirations. It does determine what we believe. Carol Dweck wrote a book called Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. And in that book, she said, when people already know their deficit, they have nothing to lose by trying. True enough. A lack of understanding kills the truth. Becoming a better friend, becoming a better companion requires, it demands that we become better people. That takes work, and that work needs understanding. So the parents of a murdered boy, they sue the city because the police department proved corrupt, at least in this investigation. Evidence was intentionally hidden. Now, the public doesn't have all the information that is available to the family of the victim. And so there's this public outcry, and they rail against this family. They're money-grubbing, greedy, greedy people. But money's the least of the family's concerns. In fact, money's not even the concern of the family. They want justice for their son's murder. They also want to restore faith in the police because they do not want other families enduring what they endured at the hands of a corrupt investigation. Well, frankly, a specific investigator. Now, the public doesn't understand, but they think they do. And they are convinced, we've got this all figured out. These are money-grubbing people. I mean, they know exactly why this family is suing the city, but they're wrong. They're wrong. Turns out a corrupt detective had destroyed evidence, and his lies destroyed the truth for a time. It had painted an untrue narrative of this victim in order to pin the murder on an easy suspect. And the detective, well, he would be the hero. I mean, he convicted this person based on strong but circumstantial evidence, and evidence that turned out was largely the result of a fictional story. Over time, over years, most come to understand what they formerly didn't. A clearer understanding reveals the truth. And the truth results in this change in behavior toward this family. And that's how understanding unlocks things for all of us. For all of us. Things we may not be able to see, and things that may not be quite exactly what we think, and our assumptions and our cognitive biases, they interfere with the truth. It's bad enough. It's bad enough for us to practice a lie, like this detective. It's worse for us to have our lie be put upon other people. Well, that speaks to companionship. You know, I would suppose, as you watch or listen to this, you have not been able to avoid grossly misunderstanding or being grossly misunderstood at some point in your life. I mean, it's likely that we have all been severely misjudged somewhere along the way as well. And don't we hate it? I mean, don't we hate it when we're misunderstood? I mean, we think little of seriously discerning whether or not we're properly understanding other people, though. But we hate it when people misunderstand us, especially when people misunderstand our motives or they ascribe to us motives that just absolutely don't exist, like the parents suing the city. There's wisdom in following the evidence. What do people do? What and how do they say it? And what can we know to be true? And how can we mesh their words with their actions? Well, we can. We do it all the time. So a woman vows to be a good wife and a mother. Sounds credible. But a closer examination realizes she's a drunken, promiscuous person. And now this other picture unfolds. The truth. Doesn't matter what she says. It doesn't matter how she says it. She can make all the claims that she wants, but we can discern her character by the way she behaves, by the choices that she makes. Not what she claims to be, but what she actually is. Ah, there's the rub. What are you? Who are you? I mean, it may not explain why she does what she does, because over time she may be shown to be this selfish, neglectful wife and mom, but she has fabricated this narrative in her head to make herself appear different, better. Lovely, faithful, dutiful, concerned. But the behaviors don't exemplify any of that. So which is it? Is it what she says or is it what she does? Well, we know the answer to that. She is who she is. She's not who she says she is. What about you? What about me? What makes us worthy of companionship? What makes us a good friend? What makes us a good spouse? What makes us a good parent? What makes us a good grandparent? What makes us poor in those areas? I mean, don't get me wrong, words matter, but the words have got to be congruent because the actions matter more. And the truth is congruency with both. It's interesting. When actions are wise and good, the speech is congruent with the behavior. I mean, the person that, I guess a person could be, as I tend to be, self-deprecating, and it's not like bragging or anything, but a person who may be genuinely, truly dutiful and honorable and integrity, and the language is going to be congruent with that. It's when the behavior and the choices are sinful and selfish, that's when the stories that are told don't match up. Watch any police show, and as they're talking to the suspect, and they've got overwhelming evidence that this is, they've got their guy, they've got their person, they got their gal. And the person will admit to something, and inevitably they will downplay their role in it. I was watching some show about the FBI, and there was a series of jewelry store. It wasn't a break-in. It was a gunpoint robbery, and it was this attractive young female. Well, they had her on security camera. Well, they finally tracked it down, and she seemed to be part of a four-person group, but she was always the one who went into the jewelry store and actually pulled the gun. But these other people were kind of behind the scenes, pulling strings. When they arrest her, she, of course, falls on the sword because, well, I mean, come on, they've got her picture over and over. They got all kinds of video footage. It's her. But she downplays her role in it. You know, it really wasn't her idea. It was these other guys, and they put me up to it, and I was scared of them. You know, so she minimized her role in the thing. And every single show that you watch, the police constantly tell this is what happens. When and if people do confess, they always minimize their role and they try to push it on somebody else. And I suppose to some degree, when bad behavior is in play, we probably all tend to do that. Truth. A commitment to high standards of behavior, a determination to grow, a willingness to make things right, a humility to accept responsibility, a courage to change and improve, a resistance against pointing fingers, a resistance against minimizing my role in why I'm not a good companion, why I'm not a good friend, why I'm not a good person, the bravery to look in the mirror and to see ourselves more clearly. And it all starts here. It all starts with us. It all starts with me. It all starts with you. It doesn't start with them. The path forward to provide value to others starts with making ourselves valuable by behaving more wisely. And it's hard, arduous, daunting, sweat-filled work. And frankly, it's awesome because it's also troubling. And it's troubling because the work involves staring down your own demons. The work involves staring down your own inadequacies and the things, the baggage and the whatever else is getting in your way of being who you most could be and should be. Who you are tomorrow begins with what you do today, said somebody named Tim Fargo. Who you are tomorrow begins with what you do today. If you're going to be a better companion, you're going to have to conquer yourself, not somebody else. We all have to conquer ourselves in order to be a better companion. We don't have to conquer others. Let me read you some verses from Romans chapter 7, verse 22 through 25. For I delight in the law of God after the inward man, but I see a different law in my members warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity under the law of sin, which is in my members. Wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me out of the body of this death? I thank God through Christ Jesus our Lord. So then I of myself with the mind indeed serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin. The key to improving our companionship skills is to get busy with our minds, because our minds drive our behavior. Now, whether you serve God Jehovah or somebody else or something else, that's for you to decide. But we are all serving somebody. Things go wrong. You can mark it down. Things go wrong when we serve ourselves. You can choose to, but it won't go well. That makes us poor companions, because that makes us bad humans. It destroys our influence to help other people. It diminishes our value. It results in a loss for everybody, most especially for us. Tom Petty sings, "You don't know how it feels to be me," or do you? I mean, we share more than we think, especially in this battle to become better humans, especially in this pursuit of wisdom. Some of us are fighting really, really hard. Others, okay, not fighting at all. And it's the difference in keeping good company or not. It's the difference in having good companions or not. 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceived. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. And there it is. Our companionship with others, it can be good, it can be evil. The companionship that we choose to surround us can be good, it can be evil. And we get to decide the kind of companions that we will be and the kind of companions that we want to be around. Companionship is not about perfection. I'm not a perfect man because I wasn't a perfect boy. I'm not a perfect husband. I wasn't a perfect father. I'm not a perfect grandfather. But it is about a few critical things. It's about caring, both for you and for others. And it's about deeply caring. It's about understanding, where you're both committed to understand each other as fully as possible. It's about belief. It's about belief in each other. It's about encouragement. It's but both of you providing the encouragement that's necessary so you each of you can grow individually and together. It's about compassion, which is defined as a focus on others. Then you got to remain focused on helping each other. It's about grace. When you get it wrong, and you will, it's about both of you being determined to make it right, because the relationship is that important to you both. So what kind of a companion are you? And are you interested in making yourself a better companion? Then the way forward is to become a better human. The way forward is to lean toward wisdom, which I define as getting it right in real time. It's hard, arduous work, people. Ain't nothing easy about any of this. Hard, but worth it, and very doable. Hey, before I say goodnight, in addition to the little action camera, I've got some wireless mics made by Rode. I didn't get enough money. I didn't hit my goal. I came woefully short of my goal, but it's okay because I ponied up the dough. And so I've got two little wireless mics, two now, that I can attach to this device. And you're going to see this moving forward. You're going to see more and more of me with not big headphones on and a big microphone. I'm not saying all the time, but you're going to start seeing it. So just brace yourself. I'm not sure that I'm made for 4K, by the way, 4K video. I'm way, way better in standard definition. I'm not even good in HD, but now 4K. And now there's 8K coming out. I'm like, okay, I'm not even ready for 720p. Yeah. And I'm probably better in black and white too. So there's that. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. If you are a mature introvert seeking wisdom, well, you're my people. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.